As I was strolling through the park today, I noticed a beautiful white swan out in the lake, and it almost felt like it was looking back at me. So I thought it wouldn't hurt to go out there and pay it a little visit to say hello, as it reminded me of the story of Leda and the swan from Greek mythology, where the god Zeus, in the form of a swan, seduces Leda on the same night she slept with her husband, who was king of Sparta. There's a lot of art created through the years depicting this myth, but in April 2012, an art gallery in London, England, was instructed by the police to remove a modern exhibit of Leda and the Swan, as it appears it violated some laws condemning violent pornography and is no longer permitted to be shown. That said, in Greek mythology, Leda was an Aetolian princess who became a Spartan queen and mother of Helen of Troy. Aetolia is a mountainous region of Greece, which after the death of Alexander the Great in 323 BC, was referred to as the Hellenes. Now Helen of Troy is spelled with one L, and Hellenes has two L's. And although the term is often attributed to Helen of Troy, or Helen of Sparta, Helen, with two L's, was the name of the male son of the only two survivors of a flood, similar to the one described in the story of Noah's Ark. After the death of Alexander, some city-states came under Greek influence and were thus Hellenized, and the descendants of Helen were of a specific tribe, so the Hellenes were not necessarily ethnic Greeks as we know them today. This Hellenization spread and its influence reached the Balkans, the Middle East, Central Asia, and parts of India and Pakistan. This era came to an end after Rome defeated Macedon in 168 BC and truly ended in 31 BC when Octavian, who later became Augustus Caesar, defeated Mark Antony and Cleopatra and made Greece a part of the new Roman Empire. This ancient Greek flood myth comes to us from Ovid's work called Metamorphoses, and like the tales found in the Old Testament and the Epic of Gilgamesh, the flood is a punishment of humankind by the gods. Great flood tales appear in many different Greek and Roman documents. Hesiod's Theogony from the 8th century BC, Plato's Timaeus from the 5th century BC, Aristotle's Meteorology from the 4th century BC, and many others. Early Jewish and early Christian scholars believe that the various versions were all part of a single ancient flood that affected the Mediterranean region, and the various Noah characters refer to the same person, and his descendants and offspring were of the same tribe or race. In Ovid's tale, Jupiter, or Zeus, hears of the evil doings of humans and descends to earth to find out the truth for himself. Welcomed by the devout populace, his host prepares a feast for him, but then plots to kill him and serves up human flesh for dinner. Jupiter, or Zeus, returns to the Council of Gods, where he announces his intention to destroy the whole human race and every living creature on earth. He sends down a thunderbolt, destroying the house of his host, and turns him into a wolf. Jupiter invokes the flood waters, opening the waters of the sky and the sea together, and water covers the entire earth and wipes out every living creature. The rain and thunders lasted for 9 days and 9 nights, and the land was flooded. When Jupiter sees that all life has been extinguished except for one ideal, pious married couple, he sends the north wind to scatter the clouds and mist, and he calms the waters and the flood subside. This couple were also instructed to build an ark and end up settling on a mountain in central Greece, and the myth says that once they saw the extent of the destruction, their grief was so great that the tears kept pouring from their eyes. After offering a sacrifice to Zeus and throwing some stones down a hill, they eventually produce offspring to repopulate the earth, that are not related to the gods. Helen was one of their sons, spelled with two L's, like in the Hellenes, and he sired Aeolus, founder of the Aeolians, Doris, founder of the Dorians, and Zeuxis, who sired Aeacus, founder of the Aeacians, and Leon, founder of the Leonians. These are the four major tribes in which the Greeks divided themselves in the ancient world. It's important to note that Helen's grandfather was Prometheus, who had a conflict with Zeus and was tied up on the Caucasus Mountains. With that in mind, I'd like to play a short retelling of the Prometheus tale, which includes this Greek flood myth, from a book called Old Greek Stories by James Baldwin.
In those very early times there was a man named Deucalion, and he was the son of Prometheus. He was only a common man, and not a titan like his great father, and yet he was known far and wide for his good deeds and the uprightness of his life. His wife's name was Pyrrha, and she was one of the fairest of the daughters of men. After Jupiter had bound Prometheus on Mount Caucasus, and had sent diseases and cares into the world, men became very, very wicked. They no longer built houses and tended their flocks and lived together in peace, but every man was at war with his neighbor, and there was no law nor safety in all the land. Things were in much worse case now than they had been before Prometheus had come among men, and that was just what Jupiter wanted. But as the world became wickeder and wickeder every day, he began to grow weary of seeing so much bloodshed and of hearing the cries of the oppressed and the poor.
"These men," he said to his mighty company, "are nothing but a source of trouble. When they were good and happy, we felt afraid lest they should become greater than ourselves, and now they are so terribly wicked that we are in worse danger than before. There is only one thing to be done with them, and that is to destroy them, every one."
So he sent a great rainstorm upon the earth, and it rained day and night for a long time. And the sea was filled to the brim, and the water ran over the land and covered first the plains, and then the forests, and then the hills. But men kept on fighting and robbing, even while the rain was pouring down and the sea was coming up over the land. No one but Deucalion, the son of Prometheus, was ready for such a storm. He had never joined in any of the wrongdoings of those around him, and had often told them that unless they left off their evil ways, there would be a day of reckoning in the end. Once every year he had gone to the land of the Caucasus to talk with his father, who was hanging chained to the mountain peak.
"The day is coming," said Prometheus, "when Jupiter will send a flood to destroy mankind from the earth. Be sure that you are ready for it, my son."
And so, when the rain began to fall, Deucalion drew from its shelter a boat, which he had built for just such a time. He called fair Pyrrha, his wife, and the two sat in the boat and were floated safely on the rising waters. Day and night, I cannot tell how long, the boat drifted hither and thither. The tops of the trees were hidden by the flood, and then the hills, and then the mountains. And Deucalion and Pyrrha could see nothing anywhere but water, water, water. And they knew that all the people in the land had been drowned. After a while the rain stopped falling, and the clouds cleared away, and the blue sky and the golden sun came out overhead. Then the water began to sink very fast and to run off the land towards the sea, and early the very next day the boat was drifted high upon a mountain called Parnassus, and Deucalion and Pyrrha stepped out upon the dry land. After that it was only a short time until the whole country was laid bare, and the trees shook their leafy branches in the wind, and the fields were carpeted with grass and flowers, more beautiful than in the days before the flood. But Deucalion and Pyrrha were very sad, for they knew that they were the only persons who were left alive in all the land. At last they started to walk down the mountainside towards the plain, wondering what would become of them now, all alone as they were in the wide world. While they were talking and trying to think what they should do, they heard a voice behind them. They turned and saw a noble young prince standing on one of the rocks above them. He was very tall, with blue eyes and yellow hair. There were wings on his shoes and on his cap, and in his hands he bore a staff with golden serpents twined around it. They knew at once that he was Mercury, the swift messenger of the mighty ones, and they waited to hear what he would say.
"Is there anything that you wish?"
he asked.
"Tell me, and you shall have whatever you desire."
"We should like, above all things," said Deucalion, "to see this land full of people once more, for without neighbors and friends the world is a very lonely place indeed."
"Go on down the mountain," said Mercury, "and as you go, cast the bones of your mother over your shoulders behind you."
And with these words he leapt into the air and was seen no more.
"What did he mean?" asked Pyrrha.
"Surely I do not know," said Deucalion. "But let us think a moment. Who is our mother, if it is not the earth, from whom all living things have sprung? And yet, what could he mean by the bones of our mother?"
"Perhaps he meant the stones of the earth," said Pyrrha. "Let us go on down the mountain, and as we go, let us pick up the stones in our path and throw them over our shoulders behind us."
"It is rather a silly thing to do," said Deucalion. "And yet there can be no harm in it, and we shall see what will happen."
And so they walked on, down the steep slope of Mount Parnassus. And as they walked, they picked up the loose stones in their way, and cast them over their shoulders. And strange to say, the stones which Deucalion threw sprang up as full-grown men, strong and handsome and brave, and the stones which Pyrrha threw sprang up as full-grown women, lovely and fair. When at last they reached the plain, they found themselves at the head of a noble company of human beings, all eager to serve them. So Deucalion became their king, and he set them in homes, and taught them how to till the ground, and how to do many useful things. And the land was filled with people who were happier and far better than those who had dwelt there before the flood. And they named the country Hellas, after Helen, the son of Deucalion and Pyrrha, and the people are to this day called Hellenes. But we call the country Greece.
The Ogygian Flood is so called because it occurred in the time of Ogyges, a mythical king of Attica, who some claim was the founder and king of Thebes. The Ogygian Flood is said to have covered the whole world and was so devastating that Attica remained without kings until the reign of the first king of Athens. Plato argues that this flood had occurred 10,000 years before his time in his work called Laws, Book 3. And in his work Timaeus and in Critias, he describes the end of the Atlantean civilization with the great deluge of all as having taken place 9,000 years before the time of Solon, making it during the 10th millennium BC, going on to say that many great deluges have taken place during the 9,000 years since Athens and Atlantis were preeminent. According to the Theogony of Bibliotheca, Prometheus molded men out of water and earth and gave them fire, which, unknown to Zeus, he had hidden in a stalk of fennel. When Zeus learned of it, he ordered Hypatius to nail Prometheus to Mount Caucasus, a Scythian mountain. According to Herodotus, the indigenous inhabitants of the Aegean Sea region were previously called Pelasgians. Populations identified as Pelasgian spoke languages that at the time Greeks identified as barbaric, a term which means bearded in Latin and several other languages, and in modern times is incorrectly defined as uncivilized. Keep in mind, the pharaohs of Egypt were depicted with beards. The Mesopotamian and Aryan kings had beards. The Chinese emperors had beards, as did the Vikings and Germanic people who overthrew the Roman Empire. They had beards. The term Berber was also applied to the Amazigh, the native Caucasian people of North Africa, and while it is considered derogatory, its origins comes from an ancient vow of celibacy, in which biomagnetic energy was harnessed and transmuted into spiritual vitality and strength. This concept is retained in the biblical Samson story, and the reason why he loses his power by sleeping with Delilah, who symbolically cuts his hair. It is also why in ancient times virgin girls would have long hair, and a woman that committed sin or adultery would have her hair cut to shame her, as not cutting hair was related to this vow back when people understood the secrets of internal alchemy. Greek was the name given by Romans to the people who called themselves the Hellenes, but the etymology of Helen is unknown. Some propose it comes from a derivation of a word for torch, such as the one Prometheus is famous for. The name Helen means shining light in Greek, or the bright one, and the German word hell can also be translated as bright or light. The word Illuminati is used by a sect that claims to possess special enlightenment or knowledge of something, and derives from Latin meaning enlightened. While most believe this word and concept started with the sect formed by Adam Weishaupt, Jacob Frank, and financed by the Rothschilds in 1776, its roots can be traced back much farther into history and even prehistory, before the myths of Prometheus and even Lucifer, which means light-bearer in Latin. So, what was the crime that Prometheus committed that angered the gods and caused Zeus to tie him to a cliff on a mountain? Prometheus decided to make man like the gods by lighting a torch from the sun and bringing it back to man. Of course, this is symbolic and does not mean that Zeus was enraged that man again had fire to cook with or to use as heat by sitting around the flame or campfire. In alchemy, fire is represented by a triangle and is associated with the color red, as is the root chakra in Tantra and early traditions of Hinduism, and is also a color associated with the Phoenicians, which comes from a word meaning red in Greek. Prometheus, the fire bringer, is credited with bringing mankind divine knowledge and enlightenment, which does not come from reading books, but is a form of gnosis, and used to describe an understanding of spiritual mysteries derived from an altered state of consciousness. Prometheus is a trickster god, which in mythology means a character that has secret knowledge and disobeys the rules, or shows some sort of defiance. In the Garden of Eden story of the Bible, the serpent plays the role of the trickster, who also defies God's instructions to not eat of the forbidden fruit, which, like fire, is also symbolic. Most modern interpretations associate the serpent with Lucifer, a prince of darkness, the chief architect of evil. The reality is that before the 17th century, Lucifer had never been a name of the devil. One of the early popes of Rome bore that name, and there was even a Christian sect in the 4th century which was called the Luciferians. The name Lucifer is not in the Hebrew Bible. It was introduced into translations of the Bible, and this minor change had massive impacts on the interpretation of Christian doctrine and the now widespread misunderstanding of the name Lucifer. Lucifer, the carrier of the light, is the equivalent to the Greek Prometheus, who brings the fire of enlightenment to humanity, yet is punished for this act. The fall of Lucifer symbolizes how, because of certain mistakes, the divine fire within us has fallen into degeneration. More ancient and esoteric interpretations of the same story, much of which has been withheld, left out, or removed from modern Bibles, explains that, like Prometheus, the snake was trying to bring enlightenment and inner knowledge to Adam and Eve by telling them that God said not to eat the fruit, but it was okay to touch the fruit. Of course, Adam and Eve did not listen and were expelled from the garden. I've included some links in the description to prior videos I made that elaborate on the symbolism associated with the Garden of Eden for those that are interested. Their sin, stemming from eating of the forbidden fruit, was an act linked to the carnal acts. The word sin itself stems from an ancient god of the moon in Mesopotamian religions of Sumer, Akkad, Assyria, and Babylon, which comes down to us in the biblical Sem. In other words, the god of the Greeks called Zeus is called Jupiter by the Romans, and Jupiter is associated with Japheth in the Bible, a son of Noah who all Indo-Europeans or Aryans are said to be descended from. That said, Sem is another son of Noah from who the Babylonians are descended from, where we get the term Semites from, including Jews, and is associated with Sin, the moon god. We see this esoteric presence clearly in Islam. For instance, the crescent moon and five-pointed star found in Islamic symbolism owes its origin to the appearance of the crescent moon and star, which is his consort Venus in Mesopotamian iconography. Here, the crescent moon represents Sin, and the pentagram represents the goddess Inanna, Ishtar, or the planet Venus. In English, the word sin can be defined as guilt, crime, or offense against God. To commit sin means to transgress, to be found guilty of. To live in sin means to cohabit without marriage. And while the etymology of the word is murky at best, I'm certain there's an association to the ancient moon god, as the secret mystery schools behind the mythology of the moon has to do with sacred rituals and carnal acts, which when performed in a certain way, which does not involve eating the forbidden fruit, results in gnosis, or heightened spiritual awareness, and alchemical transmutation. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon. My books make a great gift. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through Patreon. There should be a link in the description section for those who are interested. I appreciate it very much. Thank you. Please don't forget to hit the like button and subscribe for future updates. As always, I look forward to reading your thoughts, so please leave a comment below. Have a wonderful week, and I hope to see you again soon.